If you haven't listened to our previous episodes, check those out first. This is the last episode, so you'll want to know what's going on before you listen.
And a warning before we start. This podcast deals with child abuse and neglect. There is also strong language.
Teresa Fogel's case officially closes in late February 2023, at least for the most part. Azriel, Ryland, and Everly are back home. Josiah isn't. He'll be staying with Jamie and will turn 18 in May. But for all intents and purposes, the saga with Children's Services is over. After her final hearing on February 27th, we asked Teresa what she thinks this whole thing has accomplished.
Because that's the idea, right? When you look at how the system is structured, how it frankly justifies its existence through the case plan, the push for reunification, everything, we're supposed to be leaving families better than we found them. You don't want to think that a person could endure everything Teresa has, all on the basis of some unsubstantiated allegations, just for nothing. That there could be no silver lining to any of this. And yet, as far as Teresa is concerned, at the end of this whole ordeal, she and her children are exactly where they would have been anyway, if not a little worse off. I'm David Forster.
And I'm Teo Peck Suzuki. And this is the final episode of 150 Days from WOUB. After this final interview with Teresa, David and I have a story to write. It's one of the most ambitious projects we've ever tackled, divided into 8 chapters, so we decided we're going to build our own website to house it, and that ends up taking a pretty long time.
It turns out building a website writing custom HTML code is not a fast process. During that time, Teo and I are hard at work writing and revising the story. For the next few months, we don't hear anything from Teresa. We publish the story on May 4th. I email Teresa to tell her the website is up, but she doesn't respond.
In the last chapter of our written story, we share what we know about where Teresa's life is headed. This is from the interview at the end of February after her case is closed. At the top of the chapter is a photo of Teresa's family at a lake in southeast Ohio. Teresa and Tyler are standing together. Teresa has her arm around Rylan. They're both smiling, and you can really see the family resemblance. Azriel is standing right next to Tyler, also smiling. Everly is in front, looking a little somber. They're together. A bit bruised, but together.
Of course, one face is missing from the photo, Josiah's. Teresa has always believed it was Josiah who set the Children's Services case in motion. And as far as she can see, it was her other children, his siblings, who suffered the consequences of his actions. The girls in abusive foster care, Azriel in residential treatment. Josiah is still in Butler County with his aunt, which is exactly where Teresa says he always wanted to go. She insists Josiah will not be coming back to live with her again. At the same time, as deeply betrayed as Teresa feels, Josiah is still her eldest child. As he enters adulthood and all the challenges that represents, she still worries about him, deeply.
Before the final court hearing in February, Teresa shares with us a series of text exchanges she had with Josiah a few weeks before. In some of his messages, there are hints of remorse. He apologizes for what happened, but says he had no choice. Teresa confronts him with the allegations he supposedly made to Children's Services. She asks when he ever lacked anything, clothes, food, whatever. Josiah replies, quote, "I never said none of that," unquote.
Josiah never agrees to speak with us. We never get to ask him for his version of events. But in these texts he sends Teresa, he claims none of the allegations we've spent so much of this podcast talking about came from him. Teresa is certain they did. And her mother, Cheryl, agrees.
I believe in my heart that Josiah concocted every bit of this to get his way. He's always wanted to live with Jamie. He loves Jamie. And he's wanted to just to be there. Well, he's there at everybody's expense, but he's there.
Most stories start with some kind of conflict. Over the course of the story, you see how the characters confront that conflict. And then at the end, one way or another, there's a resolution. Except for Teresa, there is no resolution. It's like the story is stuck. It can't end because the rift that erupted between her and Josiah is still there. It hasn't moved.
But resolution or not, life keeps going. And Teresa has three of her kids back. They're going to school in the Trimble School District, which includes Gloucester. And the kids are making friends. Azriel is getting involved in sports. Rylan and Everly seem to have gotten through the trauma of their foster care experience.
Teresa has always wanted to get a job working in nature. In fact, she's considered enrolling in an online program for a degree in wildlife conservation biology. But those plans are on hold as she just tries to find stability. And That's where we left Teresa in late February, stuck in some ways, moving forward in others.
The story gets published. Teo and I wonder what kind of an impact it's having. We'd love to know whether anything has changed at Children's Services, but we know that's not something anyone will ever tell us. Meanwhile, we get to work on other stuff.
But there's a lot about Teresa's story that continues to weigh on us. David and I talk about it every so often. Like, what if something else goes wrong for Teresa or her family? There was so much uncertainty about the future when we left them, and uncertainty can cut a lot of different ways. Then, one day, it happens. David's scrolling through the most recent sheriff's call log, and he sees a familiar address. He double-checks with me. Sure enough, it's Teresa's.
The report is pretty vague. It just mentions a disturbance with a juvenile. But we know that's enough to get Children's Services' attention. And given Teresa's history, who knows where that could lead.
More time passes. I'm out covering a summer food distribution at Trimble Elementary Middle School, and I bump into Rylan. She's helping hand out food. She tells me her dad is trying to get custody of her and Everly. Doesn't really go into much detail. But it's becoming clear we really need to check back in with Teresa before we can finish this podcast.
It's late September before we're finally able to sit down with Teresa and catch up.
I don't even know where to start.
She's just been at the courthouse for a pretrial hearing in her custody battle with her ex-boyfriend, Justin. And she has a lot to say.
Let's start with the girls. Rylan, doing excellent. Other than the situation that I'll get into with what we were just at court for. She just got her midterm all A's, 1 B in social studies, and that was just because of one bad grade on a test. She did the peanut butter and jelly with Becky Handa. I think that you ran into her.
Teresa tells us Rylan has a new friend, a boy named Dakota.
They were together pretty much all summer, hanging out, whatever. And that boy is hilarious. I love him to death.
It's Dakota who initially suggests Rylan do the food distribution at Trimble Elementary Middle School. Teresa is hesitant because Becky Handa, who runs the distribution, works for Children's Services. But Dakota's mom convinces Teresa it's okay.
She's like, you'll like Becky. It's fine. She's fine. Whatever. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. That'll look good on your college resume. So go ahead. And she enjoyed doing that. She was in Girl Power at the end of last year, which Becky Handa is like a big part of that whole thing, helping females, you know, just stand up for themselves. It's about like they do yoga. They had a banquet last year and Rylan got to wear a dress and go to the Baroque Lodge and all girls, and she loved it. I have her signed up for that again. She loves the school.
There is some of what Teresa calls fifth grade drama, some bullying, but the school reacts very quickly. Teresa is impressed.
The school was on it. They're not playing with that at all, which I was happy to see because a lot of people don't take those things as serious, and Trimble does not play, I guess, when it comes to this.
Everly, it seems, has come out of her shell. She was always much quieter than Rylan whenever we saw her. Not so much now, apparently.
She loves going to school. She has a Wednesday backpack. She is obsessed with Wednesday Addams. Obsessed. She has, a Wednesday dress that's long sleeve that she's wearing for Halloween. She's being Wednesday. I just got her a wig off Shein. She has a white dress with Wednesday on it, bell bottoms with violins and Wednesday on it, a short sleeve dress with Wednesday on it, a poster of Wednesday. It's Wednesday everything. She is like definitely like emo. She doesn't want to wear anything but black. I just bought her a shirt off Shein that has fishnet sleeves. She loves it. She loves it. So we love that, you know. She wants to dye her hair black. I said, no, you're never doing that. You have blonde hair. But she's just so funny. She has definitely come out of her shell a lot.
Teresa believes this is a sign Everly is healing from the trauma of last year. We should also note the girls have continued to visit Justin, their father, every other weekend, which has been the arrangement ever since Justin initially voiced his intention to pursue custody back in September 2022. More on that in a bit.
And then we come to Asriel.
That boy.
The short version is, Asriel's girlfriend gets pregnant in January. Teresa has some doubts about who the father is, but she says the test will cost $260, which she isn't going to pay. Uncertainty notwithstanding, Asriel is looking at becoming a father. And by the time June rolls around, there's a lot of tension between the girlfriend and Teresa, which translates to tension between Teresa and Asriel.
I had allowed him to go visit her in Middletown with the girls because she didn't want to come to my house. And he got there and tried to pull the I'm not coming home card.
In an echo of what happened last year, Teresa and Tyler drive out to Middletown to pick Asriel up. And there's a whole hullabaloo trying to get him.
We're not going to go into too much detail about this because it involves too many people. But basically, relations between Teresa and the people she knows in Butler County are still not good. And it's affecting her relationship with Asriel.
You may recall we mentioned a bit ago that there was a police report with Teresa's address on it. Well, Teresa explains that too. It starts when one of Asriel's friends comes over. Teresa openly says she doesn't like this kid and wants him out of the house.
He was like, you care if he comes in? I gotta grab something real quick. And I'm like, hurry up, you know, while they're up there for an hour. And I'm like, Azzy, your friends aren't supposed to be at my house. Your friend needs to leave.
Teresa says Asriel's friend keeps refusing to leave and Asriel isn't helping. Eventually, the boys take off and then come back. One thing leads to another, and Teresa says Asriel gets physical with Tyler. Teresa calls the police, Asriel gets arrested, and Children's Services gets a phone call.
How long from the time this incident happened until Children's
Services? Like 20 minutes. He had just gotten arrested.
Less than an hour?
If this sounds familiar to you, it should.
He's already been arrested, and then I've got Children's Services knocking on my door again.
Yep.
Saying that the allegations were that Tyler beat the hell out of my son and that there was chunks of meat missing from his skin.
We've got a video.
Oh, yeah, I have the video. Cause
our video recorded.
As soon as she
CPS
knocked
page.
on the door, we were out back talking to the neighbor about what happened. Yeah. He pulls out the camera and starts recording.
Yeah.
And she's like, are you recording me? And I'm like, hell yeah, he is.
Yep.
Hell yeah, he is. Recording you.
Teresa is not about to endure another round of child welfare intervention.
Really important question, though. Did she tell you who she was and who she was
yes.
with this
mm-hmm.
time?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And then she even went downstairs, got on the phone with Stephanie McDaniel, and Stephanie's like, you know, did you do this? Did you do that? Did you do this and that? Did you do this and that? Oh, yeah, she did.
Stephanie McDaniel is the supervisor at Athens County Children's Services who Teresa encountered after her kids were removed.
You may recall that after Asriel came back from a residential treatment facility Children's Services placed him in, Teresa immediately scheduled therapy for him. Unfortunately, she and Azzy became dissatisfied with the therapist they found.
I specifically got him in therapy due to the trauma. It was trauma-based therapy. This was not anger management. This was, let's talk about what's just happened here this last year. Therapist did not want to focus on that at all. She wanted to bypass that and let's focus on when you get angry again, here's what we're going to do. Finally, after like the fourth or fifth visit, he was like, I swear to God, if this therapist starts talking to me about anger, I'm going to flip. I'm like, well, don't do that because that's what we're here for, Azzy. You know, and I'm like, I will say something to her. So we went back there and she had printed out this anger wheel and all this bullshit. And she was like, this is an anger wheel. And I was like, let me stop you right there. We have made it very clear that we're not here for this. He has experienced very extensive trauma with everything he's went through, which is going to make anyone angry. Okay? We are here for you to help him with coping skills. Do you think that my kid's going to be like, oh, I'm starting to get angry. Let me pull out my chart. I don't think so. Okay? I don't fucking. So this isn't going to work. If this is the way these visits are going to go, this isn't going to work. She didn't care. So we did our, like, 45 minutes and we left. I didn't take him back there. Why would I take him back there?
Now, Asriel has had anger issues in the past. But Teresa didn't feel like that's what Asriel needed to address after his stay in a high-security lockdown facility. And when the therapist appeared to ignore her, well, Teresa didn't see the point in going back. And for a while, she thought Asriel was fine.
And then She got pregnant and everything went to hell.
She, being Asriel's girlfriend. Once her pregnancy became known, Teresa says Asriel's behavior changed, which is how we get to the incident this summer. It's reminding Teresa of what happened with Josiah, who, by the way, is now 18. According to Teresa, he's still living with his aunt.
He'll send me songs when he's feeling some type of way about what he's done. But it's just, I guess, when he's in the moment of thinking and then that passes and he don't give a shit anymore. I don't know. I'm fucked up about it all. So I just try and, I've numbed that part. Right? Because what else can you do? But now I've got my other kid doing it to me too. And then I've got all this happening with my girls. So it's just, like I said, when is it going to end? Because I can't take much more, really.
Meanwhile, Teresa has been complaining to authorities about what she views as very concerning conditions in the house of her ex, Justin, the father of Rylan and Everly.
We're not going to go into what her complaints are, but shortly thereafter, Justin decides he's going to file for custody of the girls. For real this time.
So now Teresa finds herself in a custody battle. And as she is wont to do, she starts documenting everything. Everything involving her girls, Asriel, all her concerns about Justin's house. Naturally, she wants to share all this with the attorney who is representing her in the custody dispute. They have an initial meeting. She lays out all her complaints regarding Justin, and then...
I have emailed him at least for a month and a half with no response. Imagine that.
Which is something else Teresa knows all too well.
I requested for a supervisor to contact me. Nobody will call me back.
If this were a TV show, you might accuse the writers of unoriginality. But here we are. Not yet 1 year from the day Rylan and Everly came home to Gloucester, and Teresa is already facing the possibility of losing them again.
Friend's ring is when?
I'd have no idea. They didn't even tell me that today. I'll get it in the mail.
Teresa ends up waiting almost 7 months for that final hearing. That 7 months not knowing whether she'll keep custody. 7 months of stress.
I want some peace. Like, I can't even go for a walk anymore and be... not stressed out. That was the only thing that I had. That's it. We can't take a walk anymore without that being the topic. It's not, look how pretty those flowers are, you know? It's, what's gonna happen tomorrow? You know what I mean? And it's not fair. Like, I have aged about 15 years in the last year. Mentally, I'm just exhausted. Like, I'm numb to it. I'm numb. I have learned a lot out of a lot of things and a lot of people. It's exhausted. Like, we're exhausted. We're done. We're done.
The final hearing takes place on April 15th, 2024. And the result is basically nothing. The court lets Teresa keep custody. The girls still go to visit Justin every so often. In Teresa's words, it was all a huge waste of time.
Which kind of summarizes everything since she moved to Athens County. One crisis after another that, to Teresa, seemed manufactured just to cause hurt and stress.
One thought to consider. How much of this can we still trace back to that day on June 25th, 2022, the day Teresa's family was blown apart? We can only really speculate, but we know Justin wasn't planning to take custody of the girls before that happened, and the relationship between Asriel and his girlfriend might look very different if he hadn't spent those months at Jamie's after the removal. Months where his girlfriend was, in his view, the only person he could talk to.
Obviously, no one could point to that moment and predict everything that happened afterward. And so, like Teo mentioned, this is speculation. But it's a question we ask because, as we mentioned at the start of this episode, families are supposed to leave the child welfare system better than we found them. And if that's not happening, if they do actually come out in worse shape than before, then what is the system actually accomplishing?
And that's the question that this whole podcast has been about. We'll end this final episode with two last updates. First, Teresa says she wants to move again. Probably not this year, but maybe next if she's got the money. At one point, she was even looking for affordable homes in Butler County, the place she couldn't wait to leave because she thought it was bad for her kids.
Second, Teresa recently sent us a photo of her in the Hocking Hills with her family. Teresa is holding Everly. There's Tyler with a girl we assume is his daughter. And behind them, Azriel, Ryland, and Josiah.
Teresa says he came out to visit. I ask Teresa if that means things between her and her oldest son are better. She writes back, "Yeah, we talk." For WOUB News, I'm Teo Peck Suzuki.
And I'm David Forster.
And this has been 150 Days. Thanks for listening. Days is a production of WOUB Public Media. The podcast was written and produced by Teo Peck Suzuki and David Forster. Adam Rich is the audio engineer. Music by Caitlin Krause and Brad Swinarski. To read the digital version of this story, go to woub.org/150-days.